right, let's do it.
And here we go. Snakes, Rats, and Goats, Season 31, Episode 7.
I still haven't gotten used to you calling it Season 31.
Yeah, it's Season 31 of our podcast. And this is your co-host, Ryan Elder. And with me, as always, is...
Scott Chernoff, your other co-host.
Yes. And Scott, I'm excited because we have a cool guest today.
Finally. All our other guests.
Oh.
So uncool.
Yeah. He's a singer and guitarist for the band Streetwalkin' Cheetahs. He's a director of several projects. He's the author of several actual books.
It's real.
It's Frank Meyer. Hey, Frank. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. Hey, guys.
Hi, Frank. How are you?
Good. I'm really excited you guys called me a cool guest.
Yeah. Well, think of who you're dealing with here. Anybody next to us is going to look pretty
cool. You play guitar, man.
That just means I'm a nerd in a different way. Instead of spending my childhood rebelling against sports in comic books, I just spent my childhood rebelling against sports by learning guitar solos.
Back up a second, because we have spent our childhoods together, Frank and I can attest that Frank and I also... There were some comic books.
Oh, sure. There was a lot of comic books and a lot of horror movies and sci-fi and really bad TV that we thought was really good.
Frank and I wrote comic books together.
We did. Do you want to tell them the name of our most famous / infamous comic book character ever?
Well, it's as created in like the fourth grade. It was Pooperman.
Yeah, Pooperman. he was a flying piece of poop.
Which... came way before South Park at Mr. Hankey. I just want to
say. And what's funny is that, like, I believe somewhere around the appearance of Mr. Hankey on South Park, you and I were actually talking about, you know what would be amazing? We should animate that character we had that was a flying piece of...
Shit, you can say shit.
Crap.
We were talking about, because we also revived it in high school. Pooperman made a comeback and joined up with our other comic book, The Power League, and they joined forces.
Maybe this is our
ticket to the big time is to make a Pooperman movie.
We were crossing over our own comic book characters that no one had read.
Wait a minute, Sabrina Pick.
No, yeah, we had one friend.
She read every issue.
Yeah, she really thought we were cool.
She would actually await the issues. So,
yeah.
She had a subscription. She did. A subscription by sitting near us in social studies.
Yeah.
Hot off the presses. And also, I will say that Frank and I together wrote and produced a puppet show for MTV Italy.
Mm-hmm.
This is about
it's a great
almost
credit.
10 years ago now.
Very cool.
Called Video Game Theater. Look it up. Look it up online, Video Game Theater. So anyway, Frank...
Yes.
Thank you for joining us. And I just want to, we ask this of all our guests, of course, at the top. And I know the answer. Have you ever seen Survivor before this most recent episode?
No, you don't mean the band Survivor, as in Ivan Spector.
Well,
I've seen several times.
You know, they sued Survivor, the band sued Survivor, the TV show, when it first came on, saying they stole the name.
Well, sure. They invented that word.
That word had never been said before.
Yeah. No, I had actually never seen it before. I know you're a big fan. Quite frankly, one of the reasons I've probably never seen it is because I know you're a big fan.
Thank you.
But no, I'd never seen it. I'm aware of, it as a pop culture phenomenon, and I certainly know like a few names and concepts, but I've never actually sat down and watched an episode until this one that you guys just forced me to watch.
That's amazing.
Names and concepts did you know?
I know that there's like tribes, and I know, wasn't there a guy named Richard Hatch or something?
Yeah,
everybody.
Was that the guy from Battlestar Galactica?
It is the guy from Battlestar Galactica. They're not the same guy, but they do have the same name.
Now, was Dirk Benedict on Survivor too?
God, I wish he was on. But, there have been a few celebrities of that era on Survivor as contestants.
Like who?
Not as a celebrity season. Well, we've asked this question before.
Been on?
I wish. No, let me ask you this. Which of the four main Facts of Life girls do you think was a contestant one season on Survivor? Not as a celebrity, just as a person.
I mean, I want to go with Mindy Cohn just because I feel like Mindy Cohn can do anything in this world.
In this industry, of course. That's Natalie for Facts of Life fans.
Yeah, see, I only know her as Mindy Cohn.
Right. You know her entire diverse career.
Yeah,
you
know, no, I know her whole canon of work, yeah.
You know she's the voice of Velma. Well, if you knew – now she's the voice of Velma. If you knew her canon of work, you would then know that she was not – on Survivor. Instead, it was Lisa Welchel,
wow,
aka Blair.
Wow.
Played a few years ago on season 25 of Survivor. We're currently on season 31.
Did quite
and,
well.
And Lisa Welchel did quite well.
Well, that doesn't surprise me. She had a fiery attitude on, exactly, on Facts of Life.
Well, I mean, speaking of fiery attitudes, this episode kind of shows us that maybe a fiery attitude is not what you need.
Oh, good seg. I told you, Frank, that Ryan would try to keep us on topic.
This guy's a professional, Scott. You're right about that.
So why don't we start talking about the episode now that we've established that you know the name Richard Hatch, but nothing else.
And the word tribe.
Well, let's just say, and here's my segue, I'm going to play into this. Let's just say right now I know a little bit about chaos theory.
Oh, he worked on that all night.
All day.
Workshopping that one in front of the mirror.
And you know, I was watching this episode last night, and I was thinking of you, Frank, watching it for the first time. And I was thinking, I don't know if this is the most exciting episode for somebody to watch for their first time. It's a lot of just people sitting around and talking.
Yeah.
What was your overall impression of this show?
Well, I enjoyed it. I mean, yeah, there was definitely a lot of everyone kind of plotting against each other, and there seemed to be acknowledgement of a lot of history that obviously I just wasn't aware of, but I think I get the gist of it. I mean, I don't know. I don't have anything to compare it to, but it wasn't boring for me. I thought it was interesting.
Well, that's a plus.
I definitely liked the immunity challenge, you know, was sort of a nice way to start weeding things out. And I laughed out loud when Steven started reading a poem.
Yeah.
I was just like, what the hell is going on here?
Oh, we'll talk about that.
Yeah. So I don't know, but I mean, I don't know if there's always like weird non sequitur moments like
poem.
That. But all of a sudden we started like, guys, I've got a poem. And it was like, what?
I think that might have been the first poem.
Oh, no. Maybe, Coach recites a poem for sure, right?
Coach, you're right. Coach.
Steven taking a little play out of Coach's playbook this episode.
It's, you know, speaking of history, Frank, you probably got the gist of all of these players are playing for their second time.
Yeah.
So they were all voted back on by the fans of the show. And all of them are people who played in the past, for everywhere from seasons 1 through 30. Season 1 being 15 years ago.
Had anyone won the episode?
None of these are winners. They're all getting a second chance at the game. There have been a few other all-star seasons, and some winners have come back. But this season, it is all people who, for one reason or another, needed a second chance at the game.
Gotcha.
So Steven, for instance, who you mentioned, he made it all the way to the end of the game, and he was the runner-up. And he, at the very end of the game, there's a jury of people who have been voted out, and they vote on the winner between the last two or three people left in the game, depending on the season. Steven's season, it was two people, and Steven got zero votes. He was completely trounced in the end. So he's back and doesn't seem to be doing very well.
Yeah, I mean, we'll probably talk about Steven's edit, but it is so flummoxing. I have no idea what they're trying to tell us about Steven.
We love Steven, but...
Well, it certainly seems like, and I just kind of assume that this changes per episode, but like this episode seemed to focus on a few people and relationships and allies or broken allies and not focus as much on other people. But I just assume that, you know, that sort of shifts from episode to episode and, you know, you focus on different people each time. But this one definitely seemed to focus more on the whole Kaz versus Tasha, I think is her name. And
yeah.
Now, I do have one question. they credit him, this one dude is Andrew, but then they refer to him on the show as Savage.
Yes.
What's the deal with Savage?
Savage is his last name.
Really? I thought that, but then I was like, no one's last name is really Savage, unless you're like a porn star or a bounty hunter.
There have been some amazing last names looks on the show,
by the way.
Yeah.
You know, he could be a porn star bounty hunter.
He reminded me of the guy on King of Thrones who's sort of, you know, protecting slash has a crush on the dragon lady. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
He does kind of have that look, doesn't he?
Yeah.
I forget everyone's name on Game of Thrones because
I know,
because
there's a zillion characters all with unpronounceable names.
Exactly. And their names all half the time include where they're from.
Right.
Right.
Well, Savage. Some people get called by their last name. Did you notice that, like, one woman is constantly referred to as Wigglesworth?
Yes, I did. And I kept expecting, until I figured out it was a woman, I kept expecting, like, a professor. You know what I mean? Like, oh, Dr. Wigglesworth, you know?
Professor Wigglesworth?
Either that or I thought it was going to be a cat.
She should be a cat. Well, in this case, it's because there's two women in the cast, both named Kelly. And their names are very similar. Kelly Wigglesworth and Kelly Wentworth.
Well, they both have K-W?
K-W and Worth at the end of their last name.
Wow.
And Wentworth is a more recent person from season 29, and she's a young blonde. And Kelly Wigglesworth is the runner-up from season 1 15 years ago, and she's back in the game.
Gotcha.
So if you've been watching for 15 years, as I have, it's sort of a fun, rewarding season because there's all this history and all the characters are mixed up, whereas most season it's a clean slate at the beginning. This year, you know, you knew who everybody was right away and who you liked and didn't like.
To be Scott Chernoff
during a year when Survivor has a second chance.
Let me tell you, Star Wars
comes back.
Let me tell you, America, Scott Chernoff 15 years ago, whoa, party animal.
Wow.
Who was that?
That's Kimmy we can use that to transition into talking about the merge because that's Kimmy when... in response to Cass and Spencer voting together to vote out Wu. Let's talk about, you just
dropped a soundbite on us.
Oh yeah, and I have a few more in my sleeve.
It'll keep happening.
But let's talk about
a beautiful merge.
Because this is the most people they've ever merged with, I believe.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Because Jeff confirmed it when he said it's the largest tribal council ever.
Right.
And I think it comes at a really good time for Savage.
Yeah, Savage got saved.
Because he was probably next to go, don't you think?
He should. I mean, he got lucky that he wasn't the one to go last week.
Yeah. And
he can thank Abby Maria for that.
Obviously, as we'll see, it's very bad for Cass. Getting out Wu last week was super smart if there's not a merge this week.
Right. Well, I still question whether getting out Wu last week was smart for her. Remember last week, Ryan, when I insisted it was a bad move?
Well, I mean, do you think that you said that just because you knew there was a merge coming up?
No. I don't think she can help herself from just...
Well, you were
trying to cause chaos just for chaos's sake.
No, you're right.
At the expense of her own... Good. She should have just kept her mouth shut and floated along in the background. Nobody would. She wouldn't be a threat to anybody.
She was doing such a good job of that too. But that's because she didn't have to. She didn't have to go vote. I feel like as soon as Cass like smells that parchment and pen, she starts to go nuts. She's like, "Oh my god, I have to do crazy shit now. Now that I get to vote for someone." But before, up until this point, she had been shown to be being this like really lovable, kind, caring person.
Or at least trying to portray herself.
Right. She made like a gift for Kelly Wentworth. And so it was really funny to see her like all of a sudden, now that she gets to vote, she has to go nuts.
Yeah. I mean, and Frank, just so you know, that's, you know, was her MO her prior season. Was she just, she would make moves that would piss everybody off and you would wonder what was in it for her.
And yeah. I think. And she seemed like she was fairly upfront about that. I mean, at least in her interviews, because she was like, it's time to cause some chaos or something like that. Yeah. But you know what I thought was – the thing that I didn't like her like about her was that she's clearly telling at least the camera and some of her other teammates that she's sort of causing drama and chaos to sort of, you know, weed people out and to plot things and stuff. But then – in the tribal meeting, she totally immediately outs Tasha and goes like, she's just trying to cause chaos. And I'm like, what? And I mean, right. You can see how some of the other people were saying that, you know, thought that too. But that kind of sealed it. And I was like, no, this chick's kind of a backstabber. I mean, everyone seems like on some level, I mean, you gotta do for yourself and make sure you don't get kicked off the show. But she just seemed really backstabbing to me.
Yeah, I think, again, I'll go back to what I said last week. I think Cass is more concerned with being entertaining television than she is with winning the game.
And, yeah.
I mean,
and it cost her.
But it's great for us.
Yeah. It was wonderful for us.
She's still one of my like favorite players to play because she's so entertaining. She just can't help but go nuts when it's time to vote.
Yeah, and she makes it, you got to have good bad guys on any kind of competition show, and she's a great bad guy. I mean, I had no history with her. I didn't know anything, and I just instantly didn't like her. Mainly because of just the way she comes off, and she just sort of instantly seemed to have this, for lack of a better word, conniving sort of vibe about her, you know. Whereas,
and that smug, she's like that smug sort of smile.
Right, exactly.
You were going to say whereas.
I was just going to say whereas there's other folks on the show that either you liked for some reason right off the bat, or it maybe took a little while for you to form an opinion on them. You know, you didn't have an opinion at first. Whereas with her, she just sort of instantly came off as sort of smug and unlikable to me, at least.
Well, that part of that could be that they were editing her that way so that you'd rejoice when she got voted out at the end.
Sure.
But yes, I mean, definitely.
But that's also her.
It is her to a very, very certain extent.
I mean, she's more likable in her interviews off of the game, and she seems like she's probably a reasonable person. But on the show, she just can't help herself. She goes nuts, like you said. And she just makes these moves that may be really entertaining, but they're not helpful to her own cause. I mean, this was like mild for her, you know, because she wasn't actually being mean and vindictive to people. She was just kind of going a little nuts.
Let's talk about it, because Tasha does lie to her. And so when Cass calls Tasha out, she's not lying about Tasha, saying that Bion is dead, or in Tasha's words, bye-bye Bion.
Right, but you'll notice the show, the edit, made sure to let us know that Tasha was lying to her strategically.
Right, exactly.
Because she doesn't trust her.
Right.
And based on their because, Frank, they played in the same season, and she has good reason to not trust her. So,
yeah, I got that sense, and I don't know. I didn't feel like what she said when she's like, Bion is dead, was some, like, crazy statement. You know what I mean? I mean, yeah, they're playing a game, and like, she made it clear she doesn't trust her and she wasn't being totally honest with her. So I don't know. I felt like Kaz just kept reaching for that as a way to hang her. But
yeah, it didn't work. And it's because Kaz doesn't have enough trust capital with everyone else. Tasha has a lot of trust with certain people, particularly Savage and Jeremy, I think. So
if
Kaz says Tasha's lying, not enough people are going to believe Cass. It's just not a good strategy to take.
And Cass has that history where everybody knows that they can't trust her.
Right.
No matter what they've experienced the past couple weeks, they've seen her on TV from her prior season, and they know she's, you know, insane. So they know that she looks normal, but she's clinically insane. So
I don't know if she's clinically insane.
I believe she's clinically insane. And like, but it was interesting because I think Tasha sort of said that to the group. It wasn't really clear to me. It happened really fast, but it seemed like Tasha was basically saying, like, yeah, I told that to you because I don't trust you.
Yeah.
So I wasn't going to be honest with you. And I think everybody kind of went, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I lied. Of course I lied.
Similarly, Sierra, when Sierra started lying, I was surprised about Andrew because I don't think that her, like, when Tasha said what she said, it would ring true to people. When Sierra started saying that Savage wanted to get out Jeremy and Joe, I don't think that rings true to people.
It was so insane. There was just no reason for Sierra to go, hey, what about me? I can lie too.
She stuck her neck out in a weird way. And like, Andrew has this reputation as being, to his own detriment, loyal to the people. And because we've all seen them on past seasons, you know, like, okay, that's just who Andrew is. He doesn't really even have it in him to be deceptive.
They're incredible liars.
I love when he was like, fuck them.
Let me ask you guys, because I mean, I don't know enough history to know all this, but like, I generally kind of got a pretty good vibe from Andrew, like, you know, but is he, what's your take on him?
So this episode painted him probably better than he has been painted, at least. It's such a, he's getting such a weird edit because he's so being so overtly cast as a hero that it's really off-putting usually. But in this episode, he showed edge when he's like, fuck them, they're pieces of shit. That was like, I was like, hey, I actually like Savage now because he's not like the guy with the Lamborghini and the model wife, you know?
Right. That's the thing. The thing with Savage, Frank, is that basically, like, he seems like basically generally a good guy, but he's also got, he's sort of arrogant. He's sort of a humble bragger, and he's got like a really great life that I don't know that he always realizes how he comes off to people, because he's sort of like, hey, I'm the leader because I'm a great guy. And so there's a certain element where you go, yeah, you are a good guy, but I don't like the part of you that thinks you're such a good guy, if that makes any sense. He's a little arrogant and a little of a bragger without even trying, but he's basically, I think, a good guy. And both times he's played, he's just sort of can't help but play the role of the benevolent leader of his group. If that makes any sense. And if you're loyal, especially if you're like a manly man and you're loyal to him, then he's loyal to you 100%.
Yeah.
Do I have that right, Ryan?
Sounds right to me. Yeah.
Scott, is that how you describe me to other people?
As a humble bragger who's arrogant? Yes.
Yeah.
Basically. Right. That's how I pitched you to Ryan as a potential guest. I know this guy.
Like, sign him up.
He's like the Andrew Savage of the music industry.
Right.
All right. Let's
That's how I was pitching myself around town for a while. Didn't quite stick.
Nobody knew who Andrew Savage was.
Right. That was the problem.
A very small subset of people.
Really small. Like you guys.
Yeah, exactly.
You guys run a record company?
No.
Not last I checked, no. Mm-hmm. But we'll work on it. We'll work on it. So
speaking of Savage, let's talk about how the edit did make it seem like he was going home, didn't it? Based on how much coverage he was getting at the beginning.
At the beginning. Well, and yeah. I was predicting this was going to be his swan song based on last week's episode.
Yeah, and the beginning he got this like a beautiful merge. He's lifting his hands into
he's
the,
always,
the
rain. You're always a kiss of death, the more confident and cocky you are, Frank. But like on this show. And also like in Pearl Islands, he made it to the merge and then was the first one voted out immediately. And this, Frank, is usually the time. It's very unusual that like the three candidates to go, once it becomes an individual game like this, are three women, two of whom aren't very strong. Like Tasha's pretty strong, but at this point in the game, when it's a tribe, Frank, you're wanting to keep the strong people so your tribe can win challenges. When it's individual, you want to get rid of the strong people so they don't beat you in challenges. So
gotcha.
I thought that Andrew, who's super strong, would be a big contender to go, but it didn't work out that way, did it, Ryan?
No, it didn't. And I kudos to the editors for knowing that that's what they usually do and misleading us.
But I mean, nobody is trying to take out Joe, and Joe could win. When Joe won immunity, I was like,
oh, yeah.
Because Joe wins immunity, I said, like, for the first of every time this season. Like,
I just don't get it. Why did he win? Like, they just, so Frank, this is usually how they do this, is they play Immunity in the morning and then they do Tribal Council at night on the same day. So everything we saw about like discussing who to vote for and stuff happened mostly the 2 days before the Immunity challenge. So at that point, Joe already knows he's a swing vote. There's no reason for him to win Immunity when he's such a physical threat to begin with. If he, like, whatever, gives it up to Spencer or something at that point, it's not going to hurt him. And it's only going to help him, in my opinion. Scott, what do you think? Should Joe have thrown the Immunity challenge?
I mean, throwing it is always, there's always that risk. I mean, wait,
I don't understand. Why would you throw the Immunity? Why wouldn't you want the Immunity challenge?
Well,
why wouldn't you want to win it?
In Joe's particular case, he is considered such an Immunity threat. He could always win Immunity. He might just win Immunity for the rest of the show, in which case he's a shoo-in to win the game. He's that good at challenges. You name it. Puzzles, physical, balance. He's good at all of it.
He's good at mental things. He's good at, yeah, strength.
So if he shows that he's not a threat to win Immunity, they might not take him out the first chance they get.
You know what? I think...
But it might be too late. He might.
It's too late.
Knows
people
yet.
Know. People know who Joe is. People know that Joe can win almost every time. So he may as well. And he may be fairly confident he's safe. But on this show, you never know. And everybody is just telling you you're safe. And they're waiting for the first opportunity to vote you off. And that's what happened to him last time he played. Yeah. Was the first time he didn't win Immunity. They seized the opportunity and voted him off. Maybe
Joe.
Not the first time, but one of the first times.
Poor Joe. He just has to win. You know, it also
poor
hurts.
Joe. It's hard being the golden boy with amazing looks and everybody loves you and you can do anything.
You know,
it's really tough.
It does hurt his brand if he throws a challenge too. Like afterwards when he comes back, you know, one of the reasons he's so popular is because he is good at everything.
So. Yeah. I don't think he should throw it. I mean, I think he's got to play to win and just assume that that's what he has
to
do.
But maybe he could secretly hope someone else can beat him.
But he is set up a whole lot better this time than he was last time.
Yeah,
he has realized.
Yeah.
One of the interesting things this season is how all the strong guys seem to have finally figured out that instead of battling amongst each other to take each other out, they have to bond together.
Yeah.
And that I think this is the first time I've seen it actually play out that way. Usually they're going at each other and they finally figured out that, hey, if I vote Joe out, then I'm the next to go. Yeah. I'm the next strongest person. So it's really weird.
Yeah, it's interesting. It is like, as Steven says at Tribal, it is like an evolution of the game that they're now targeting sort of the under the radar, or not under the radar, but just like the people who can't win Immunity.
Steven literally said evolution of strategy, and it was like a plug for Rob's book.
Yeah. He did. Okay, speaking of Steven, why don't we talk about the poem? First of all, you should be voted out just for reciting a poem.
Frank, they do occasionally have like random moments, but only when they really happen like that. And if there's time to show them, I guess. But this was
the thing.
Weird.
There wasn't time to show this. So I think it's important because there's things they left out. For example, the naming of the merge tribe.
Right.
That's something they would normally show.
Which they was, what's the new name? Orkin? Like they appeared to name it after pest control.
Yeah,
or
exactly.
Something.
I wrote down, call the Orkin man. Yeah. I think it's a Cambodian word that means thank you or thanks.
Mm.
So. I thought it was a killer whale.
Yeah.
It's also that. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know why they didn't show that, but maybe because it's usually boring.
Well, you know, I have to say in the pantheon of merge tribe names, it is one of the better ones.
Yes, absolutely. There have been some really awful because, you know, Frank, they're given tribe names in the beginning, but when they merge, they get to make up their own name. So half the time they're really dumb.
Or they're like a combo of the two tribes that preceded.
Yeah.
They're bad. Anyways, Stephen's poem. Let's stay on that topic.
Do we know what that poem was? Can we Google it?
He tweeted the text. Like he tweeted where you could get the text of it.
Who wrote it?
He said, I just don't remember.
Yeah, he did say, I don't remember.
It was a coach.
I'm gonna look. I think I got it.
I hope it,
here.
It was coach.
I'm looking at Steven's Twitter right now. You guys talk amongst yourselves.
It was written by Purple Kelly.
The poem is called God's Grandeur. It's by Gerald Manley Hopkins.
And you know that appealed to Andrew Savage when he heard it was written by somebody named Manley.
Did someone say Manley?
Did somebody name my favorite attribute in a person?
So the poem, so the music under the poem, first thing, it's
okay,
Dodo
you've
music,
always
right?
Always noticed the music. Was it the Dodo music?
It was Dodo-esque, all right? It was definitely quirky, you know, plucky kind of music. It wasn't like heroic, right?
And well, they showed people rolling their eyes. Yeah, I mean, it seemed like half the people were as annoyed as we were.
Yeah. What do you think was going through his mind? I mean, the thing is we know we're seeing 3 days condensed into 42 minutes, and there's a lot of downtime, and there's probably a lot of dumb conversations and a lot of like talking about favorite TV shows and singing songs and doing anything to pass the time. So this may not have been super out of the ordinary, but they definitely chose to show it to us just as they've chosen to show us every time Steven has done something stupid this season.
Yeah.
Like they are really driving home this idea that Steven is a complete idiot.
So one of the things I saw a Twitter exchange where Max Dawson, I'm going to reference a bunch of ex players, Frank. Yes. Max Dawson tweeted at Sophie Clark and said, "Hey, Steven memorized a poem just like you told me to do when I played Sophie." And Sophie said, "Yeah, that's my number one advice for people playing is memorize a poem." And I think she learned it from Coach, right?
She's kidding, though. She's being sarcastic.
I think it's a bit, right? Yeah.
It's totally a bit. She's being sarcastic. She's too smart to know to say a poem.
I wonder, though. Because
Sophie won the game.
Sophie won the game. However, it is very boring out there. And you are providing some value. I mean, I hate poetry, so I would be rolling my eyes, but you are providing some value to your tribe. Like, it's like, even if it's just 30 seconds of quote unquote entertainment, it's something.
Yeah, but you got to be able to read a room.
I agree.
The comedian in me talking, but you got to know how to read a room. And some rooms don't want poetry. You think of another way to entertain.
No rooms want poetry.
Like. No rooms.
Or you go the opposite way and you tell like a Dr. Seuss poem or something.
Yeah,
like,
something funny. Or you come up with a limerick about Savage. You know?
Right. You start making up limericks if you can do that. That would be fun.
Yeah, I would definitely do that.
Improv. Little basic improv games could pass the time. But like, you know, make people laugh. I think that's a hugely valuable asset if you can do to pass the time. But I mean, Steven just seems so out of touch with everybody there. And I don't know if it's just what they're showing us, but he seems totally disconnected from the rest of the group.
So I have a prediction about Steven now, and I'm going to go on the record right now and say he makes the final three as a goat. I really think that's the.
I think you're right because otherwise, why are we seeing so much of him?
I think he makes a final three, and so
yes, you will be magically transformed into a barnyard goat.
This show is awesome.
Yeah, so a goat is
sort of like Bewitched.
Yeah, a goat is just someone who's bad at the game or who has annoyed enough people to where you take him to the end so you can beat him. You lead him to the end like a goat.
So yeah, you want to sit at the end. It's either final two or final three people sitting in front of the jury. You want to make sure you're sitting next to somebody you can beat. So people try to identify who's the goat, who's not good at the game, or who's somebody that nobody likes, like a Cass, or who's somebody that nobody will respect because they haven't really done anything over the course of the time to get there. And you know, occasionally you get two or three really good people and there's a tense vote, like who can win. But the best players will maneuver it so that they're sitting next to somebody that there's no way they can lose. And Steven, oh God, poor guy. I mean, what do you say if he's made the finals twice? What does that say about somebody Because I still maintain that somebody like Amanda or Russell, who made the finals twice in a row and didn't win, are still really, really strong players.
Yeah, you have to say they're a strong player, but their game is limited or one-dimensional.
Right.
They lack the extra something that gets you to the end and has you
But
win.
When Steven made it to the end last time, I think a lot of viewers felt like he deserved to be there in the end. And he was, you know, a mastermind of the strategy that season.
Right. Well, yeah, they showed us that, though.
They
didn't show him failing to chop wood and reciting poems. And
right. So maybe he did all that last time.
Yeah.
And that's why he lost. And they were just showing us all the positives of him to make more suspense when he ended up getting blown out of the water with zero votes.
Yeah. Well, I really think he's going to get to the end, which leads me. So he has a great secret scene this week. Secret scenes are YouTube only videos that are
deleted scenes.
And he says, like, you know, I'm looking at two groups of people. I'm looking at the people I can trust and the people I can beat at the end. And they're not the same people. So
Ooh.
He's just telling us right now, like, he can't win. That's him
right.
saying, I cannot win, you know? Because if he wants to try to take the people that he can beat to the end, they'll turn on him.
And who can he beat at the end? Who's left?
I think he can beat Abby for sure. He could have beaten Cass.
Anybody could beat Abby or Cass.
I think at this point now he could probably beat Sierra.
What has Sierra done to herself?
Just one lie.
She has so much potential. Well, there's still time for her to turn it around.
Yeah. So I thought that was really interesting, and I think that sort of like sums up Steven's position in the game, is that he's pretty much forced to go with Jeremy, you know, basically Jeremy all the way to the end.
And there's no way he can beat Jeremy.
No way. Not in a
no
million
way.
Years. Not in a million
And
years.
I would vote for Jeremy, and I love Steven, but come on.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I agree. All right. let's talk about the immunity challenge, because I enjoyed it in Kageyan, and I liked it in this one, too.
I was bummed that there was only one challenge this episode.
Oh, I know.
Usually there's two, Frank. There's a reward.
I would have been instantly out on this one.
Oh, yeah. You would have been the Steven.
I think we all would have been out for sure.
I would be instantly out on almost every challenge they have. Maybe not the gross eating challenge or a puzzle, but anything that involves physical dexterity, athleticism, or balance, I'm out.
I've seen you win a few gross eating contests, Scott.
Yes. Only there was no prize and it wasn't a contest. It was just me, the way I normally eat is very gross.
Yeah, it was dinner.
Well, you know.
And you're good at puzzles, too.
Thanks, buddy.
The problem with the puzzle challenge is the puzzle almost always comes at the end of some grueling physical task.
Right. You have to make it to the puzzle. I would never make it to the puzzle.
Which is probably Steven's greatest moment on Survivor ever, was that challenge where he was so far behind for the physical part. He gets to the end, he gets the puzzle, and nails it first try and wins, because the puzzle was like apparently so hard that even the people who were good physically couldn't get it in the extra time they had over Steven.
Who do you guys think is the smartest of all of them?
Who are out there now?
Yeah, the ones that are out there now. Because, I mean, obviously a bunch of them seem like they're in, you know, in good physical shape. I mean, maybe some are more than others.
Smartest or smartest at the game?
Like book smart, intelligence?
I guess, well, that's a good point.
Like
I guess
smartest
just
at the game.
Smartest at the game.
Smartest at the game. That's tough. I think Jeremy's very smart at the game.
I think Jeremy. Do you know which one Jeremy is, Frank?
Yeah.
African-American man. I think Jeremy, Tasha, Kelly Wentworth. She's the young blonde woman you didn't see a lot of last night. Are probably the smartest.
No, why? I don't. Jeremy wasn't quite as featured on this one.
No, right.
Everyone was kind of talking to him about things,
right?
As opposed to him instigating things. But why is he? I mean, if anything, just because he's likable and he sort of lays back a little bit.
Well, he's smart enough to use that to his advantage and let people come to him instead of instigating things, for one thing.
Okay.
But
he's also smart enough to keep Joe around and Savage around, people that are bigger targets than him physically. I think
he learned from his last time.
Yes,
that
he definitely
aligned with almost all women last time, and so when they merged, he was viewed as like the strongest person on their side, and people gunned for him. So now he's trying to surround himself with other strong people, so he's not.
I also think he's just relaxing. Like, so much of Survivor is just sitting around doing nothing, and even especially sitting around doing nothing when it seems like you should be doing something strategically or whatever. It's very, very easy to overplay, and I think Jeremy is like hitting that perfect sweet spot of talking about strategy when he needs to, but mostly just letting the game come to him.
He's also really self-aware and very aware of how he is perceived, and like the fact that his wife, for instance, is pregnant at home and he desperately wants to talk about it with people, but he won't talk about it because he knows that it will make him bizarrely more of a target, because he's already a fireman who's incredibly likable, and people will think, well, if I sit next to him at the end and he's a likable fireman and he's got a pregnant wife, there's no way I'll win. So he knows that enough, and he's able to keep it to himself. He also found the hidden idol. You didn't see anything much about hidden immunity idols last night, Frank, but that's a thing in the game, and two people in the game right now are holding secret hidden immunity idols that they've managed to find. And he both of them have resisted the temptation to tell anybody. And usually you tell somebody and it sort of, to me, that dilutes its power, or you have to know when to tell and who to tell, but he's kept it to himself. I think that's really smart. He's saving it for when he may actually need it.
Yeah, I was wondering, when they were having the tribal council vote, they mentioned the immunity thing, but no one stepped to, so you don't have to say whether you...
You don't have to play it if you don't want to.
You don't have to ever use it.
It's also why they split the votes. Even though they could have just gone 9-3 against Cass, they went 5-4-3, because if Cass plays an idol and she has five votes, it goes to the next highest vote getter. And so then they would have gotten rid of Sierra.
So sometimes people get voted out because somebody used their hidden idol and nobody knew they had an idol.
And
so
they were the second one.
Like, the whole tribe could vote against you, but if you have an idol, then your one vote could be the person who goes home. So you could end up changing the game that way. But like, they also make you do it. He says it's after the votes are cast, but before they're read. So you could also play it thinking, I need to play it tonight because I think I'm going home. And then you play it and it wasn't you. You didn't get any votes, and and now you've wasted it.
Dude, this shit is hardcore.
I know, it's crazy, man. There's a lot of levels. That's why we love it so much. And this is an episode that, while it might not be ideal for new Survivor watchers, this is the kind of episode that Scott and I live for, where there's like, you don't know who's going to vote for who in the beginning of the episode. It sort of shakes itself out a little bit. But I loved going into this merge not knowing like where the numbers are going to be. It was really fascinating to watch all of the strategy and the figuring out who's going where.
And usually it's kind of now after the merge, you know the direction it's going, but we still don't know. I think it may be that alliances keep shifting into voting blocks and not being locked down for the whole rest of the season, which is way better. The other person I was going to say who I think is playing really smart is Kelly Wentworth. And in addition to being the other person who's got an idol that she hasn't told anybody about, she was also smart. She was on board with that Cass and Sierra plan. But if you watch the votes at the end, she jumped ship. She voted against Cass.
She saw the
writing on the wall and went with it. And that's what she's done all season. Like, she is smart enough to stay out of the drama, and just, she sees what's happening and she goes, okay, I'm not going to be a part of that. it's not going to work out.
Yeah.
Whereas, hey, I have a question.
Yeah.
Who's the one person that voted for Savage at the end?
Yeah, that was Sierra. And let's talk about, Scott, why do you think Sierra voted for Savage at the end there?
I think that they knew that we didn't see this in the edit, but I think that by the time they got to Tribal Council, they knew that their plan wasn't going to work. Right. They knew Cass was going to go. So she didn't need to bother voting against Tasha because it wasn't going to work anyway. And I think that she was just expressing her hatred of Savage.
That's what I got too.
That's what I thought, but I was like, no one would do that. That's so juvenile.
Yeah, well, she's young. I mean, she's actually, I don't know, I really liked Sierra. And
this
I thought
not
she was
good,
smarter than that. This was not,
not a
she
good
did not come off as a smart player. She has been really smart in the past, but I think maybe she knew what was going on, and she knew that Savage, word must have gotten back to her that was like, no, Savage wants you off. So she must have just been firing a shot across the bow and knowing that her vote wasn't going to go anywhere, knowing that she was already on the outs.
Did you see her trying to learn from her previous season too by arguing, some of you are 6, 7, 8, 9?
Yes, for sure. She's trying to wake them up to say, you guys, and I mean, overall, she's right.
But it's way too early to worry about 6, 7, 8, 9, because when you get to 9, then 6, 7, 8, 9 become 4, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and they win, you know?
Right. So she needed to wait longer. Like, she's right overall, and she's new from last time she played. She waited too long to make any moves, and she got screwed. But so she's trying to make up for that. But yeah, she's right overall that only one person's going to win, and most of these people are keeping in players who can beat them. But she's not reading the room. It's the same thing. You got to read the room.
Yeah.
And just play the role that's going to make for the least amount of drama and draw the least amount of attention to yourself at that point. Like, Tasha's the other one that I think has been playing really well, but I think she allowed herself to get way too involved in the drama last night.
I agree. I don't know what's going on with Tasha. This was not a good episode for Tasha either, in my opinion. I mean, obviously she came out ahead in the votes, but it just didn't look good. Like, she just didn't. It didn't.
You know, you also hear, it's weird because Tasha, both times she played, is super likable and is sort of portrayed as a hero. And then you hear the people in their exit interviews after they've gotten voted off, and a lot of them say she's an angry person.
Yeah. And well, we saw it a little bit in her reactions at Tribal. Like, she was so emotional.
Yeah.
And it's like she knew Cass was going home, but she was still like making weird googly eyes and upset faces and stuff. I just wonder, like, why didn't Sierra just like chill? Because, so what? Cass goes home. You know, you live to fight another day, and you don't get branded as someone who's like in a totally other alliance.
Well, that's what Kelly Wentworth did.
Exactly.
That's what Kelly Wentworth is proving herself to be a better player.
Like, you can be used. You can be used by other people and still make it to the end,
as long as you know that you're letting yourself be used.
Exactly. Like how Savage at the beginning was like, you know, I'll come back and I'll, if they need me to be the quiet, under the radar player, I will be.
He can't do that. He's not capable of that. But speaking of quiet and under the radar, once again, we heard nothing from Abby Maria.
Yeah, that was weird. I think Abby Maria might end up going soon because she voted with Cass too.
Yeah, she was stupid enough to vote with Cass. Now, Abby, Frank, you didn't hear a word from her this episode, but for the first 4 or 5 episodes of the season, she was like the star of the show. And suddenly she's gone silent, or at least the edit on her has gone silent. And she's even more unpredictable and hard to deal with than Cass. She's just like purely, she's blonde. She's,
she
I don't know how to describe
her.
She was barely in the episode. She's very attractive. She's Brazilian, but I don't think you heard her speak at all.
Okay.
She's.
Which is just crazy because the first 4 episodes was the Abby show.
And she's just all like reaction and emotion, and like you never know what you're going to say that's going to set her off and have her go like, wait a minute, you just said that and I read this into it and now you're dead to me. And I'm going to do everything I can to get rid of you. And you're like, wait, what did I say? I don't even know what I said. So it's amazing that last week they voted off Wu, and you know she had something to do with that. You know she was super enthusiastic about voting off Wu, and we didn't see it.
Yeah.
It's really strange how you think she's just gone soon?
I don't know. Like, I honestly don't know. I don't think she makes it to the end. But
in the beginning, I thought she was guaranteed to make it to the end as a goat.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough.
If you're smart, you go to the end with Abby and Steven.
Why?
Because,
why them?
Because nobody respects Abby's gameplay. Nobody likes her. And Steven, I think, is not viewed with a lot of respect. So you want to go with people that you look better than.
Gotcha.
Well, so Frank, you've seen one episode of Survivor ever. Based on that vast knowledge, who do you think is going to win the show based on this one edit, this one episode?
Well, it's tough to say because, like we said, there's a few people that kind of weren't really even featured much on this. So I feel like I sort of got a fix on like half the cast.
But again, that should tell you something.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like, for instance, the girl you were just talking about, the Brazilian girl, like, I wouldn't have even mentioned her as someone I would think of because she was barely featured. So barring anyone that I just don't have any familiarity with, I mean, Tasha and Joe sort of struck me as, like, just strong players that seemed to kind of be keeping. Well, Tasha seemed like she was involved in a lot of drama, but sort of unwillingly. Joe seemed like he just kind of is one of these quiet hippie dudes who just kind of like is just going to power through and do everything well and make it happen. You know what I mean? I feel like I really liked Savage, but he seems like someone who's sort of a polarizing figure and is likely to get voted off at some point. But I didn't really know, and I definitely didn't like Kaz, but she's gone. There's a few people I don't feel like I got to know. Like Sierra, I could kind of tell, you know, that she was a bigger player on the show. But in this episode, I didn't really get as much of a fix for her personality. So I would go with Joe or Tasha.
What about the young lad, Spencer? He's the guy.
Yeah, I know exactly.
We haven't talked about him.
Yeah, Spencer at the beginning was sort of aligned himself with Kaz and then seemed to sort of slowly step away from that alignment as she got thrown off the show, which is a good political move. I don't know. He seemed like a cool dude, but like I kind of don't see him making it all the way through.
You know, Spencer is another answer to the question, who is one of the smarter players, I think. I think Spencer has a lot of game knowledge, and strategically, he's like lights out, more advanced than everyone else. But he's just bad at knowing where the pieces are. So like Spencer knows what to do when he looks at a chessboard and where all the pieces are. He's literally a chess master. But in Survivor, you don't always know where all the pieces are, and I think he's bad at sort of seeing the board.
He's not great at reading the room.
Yeah, but. But once he knows where the pieces are, he's very good at knowing what the right move is.
He's also survived this long this season, partly on luck.
Well, the whole game, to get to the end, does require luck.
It does require luck.
Looks, but let's not forget, he's pretty dreamy, boys.
He is very dreamy. That smooth, pale white skin.
Well, he got a cool hair. He also got a cool haircut this season, which really helps. Last time he played, he had like the stereotypical like flowy haircut where it's like all one length. So he didn't look as cool the first. He was more like a young nerd. Now this season, he's got like the cool guy haircut. So I think it's really working for him.
He's like a young Spencer Pratt.
Yeah, I think he's been getting this really phenomenal edit all season, so he has to be considered a contender to win, but I think he might be a contender to, I think he and Tasha may just be contenders to go about as far as they went last time, which is almost win,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and get cut right toward the final tribal council.
Do you, what if it's the Kageon four, just 1, 2, 3, 4? What if Tasha goes next and Spencer after her?
That'd be crazy. That'd be crazy. I don't see Tasha being the next to go. Do you?
No, no. I want to talk about Spencer. One more thing I want to talk about with Spencer was so Cass and Abby and Sierra and to a certain extent Kelly Wentworth thought, hey, we can get Spencer to switch his vote to Tasha, and they'll split their vote and we'll get out Tasha. So right. What do you think? A, do you think that I mean, obviously it didn't work. Do you think there's a better way to handle that? And B, would it have even worked anyways? Because what if Spencer was supposed to vote for, what if he was supposed to vote in the 4 block instead of the 5 block?
Right, that's a good point. Yeah, for that reason, it might not have worked. I mean, I think it's a reasonable thing for them to think they could get Spencer because they literally just saved him the week before. He would not be in the game if they hadn't switched their votes, those three. So I think it was reasonable to say, well, maybe we can get Spencer to vote with us since we just saved him and, you know, we've proven ourselves to be on his side. So he's that makes sense to go to him. It also makes sense for him to go, thanks for saving me, but goodbye.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to win with it. But on the other hand, like, let's say that their plan worked, there'd be a new 5 there. That he'd be at least, even if he's on the bottom of that 5, he's higher up than he currently is because he is not high up in the other alliance.
Yeah, Spencer is going to have to make a concerted effort to flip around a little bit because he is too far on the bottom of this 9-person monstrosity that we got going on.
Right.
Eventually. But I wondered if they had gone to Spencer and said, hey, we're all going to vote for Savage instead of Tasha. Will you join us? I wonder if he would have been like, yeah, I'll do that because I feel like Spencer and Tasha are pretty tight.
Yeah, I don't think getting Spencer to vote against I don't know why they decided to target Tasha. I think that was a big mistake. They should have, and she's so likable, and Spencer has good history with her. Why not try to target Savage? Because Savage betrayed Spencer last week and tried to get him out.
They alluded to that a few times. So what was the deal with that? He said he tried to vote him out or something?
He Savage said to him, like, they formed a new tribes last week as well that just got split up. And so they came into this tribe together and Spencer tried to align with Andrew Savage. And
Savage was like, sure, yeah, we're buddies. We're in this together.
And Spencer's like, I really like Savage. He seems like a really good guy. And then Savage like went back to the rest of the group and said, we got to get Spencer out. And he said to the camera, like, I love Spencer. If I had a son, I'd want him to be like Spencer. I think he's really smart, but he's huge competition. And he's the only one like outsider to our alliance. So we have to get him out. So, you know, Spencer had no idea that was going on until Cass and Sierra came to him and said, here's what's going on. You should vote on our side. And for some reason, instead of voting out Savage last week, they voted out
someone else. Yeah.
Well, I think because Abby hated
right,
Wu.
Yeah, I mean, it's complicated.
Abby said, I'm not going to vote against Andrew, but I'll vote against Wu.
Yeah.
So I, again, by the way, speaking of Abby, like, is there a single person she hasn't turned on?
I know. Now she turned on Tasha.
Now she voted out Tasha, who was like
they
her
were
safe.
Like best buds. Yeah. Yeah.
They don't show any of that. It's really strange. They gave all this investment of time into the Abby story and her relationship with Andrew and her relationship with Tasha. And then nothing happened. We don't see it at all.
Yeah. All right. Well, should we move on to our segments?
I guess. Did we cover the whole episode?
I guess we covered most of it.
Is there anybody we didn't talk about? How about your winner's pick, Keith?
Oh, yeah. Well, let me tell you, the thing about Keith is, and I saw this on Reddit, someone compared his edit to Dave Ball in that he doesn't get a lot of screen time, but when he does, he's gold every time.
Sure. I mean, that's, yeah. And look what happened to Dave Ball.
Exactly. So we'll see. My winner pick is obviously not going to win. Frank, we Scott and I picked winners before the season started.
Yeah, who did you guys pick?
So I picked Keith, the Southern guy, the really like
with the mustache.
Yeah, no, I know who Keith. I mean, I figured out who Keith was.
He's a really funny character his first season, but he's
a super likable guy. Everyone likes him. The reason I picked him, and it there is some like, I'm not just like I didn't just pick him because I like Keith because whatever, Keith's fine, he's funny, but. I just think like he's the kind of guy that people like and don't want to vote out because he doesn't seem like he can win. But then if he gets to the end, so many people that got voted out weren't his responsibility and they'll vote for him to win.
They wouldn't blame him.
Right. And I just think like if he makes it to the end, he could easily win. But
and he almost did it his first time. He almost made it to the end. He probably would have won. But can I tell you the best thing about Keith? And I only know this because I have opened the Survivor website right now so I can remember who's all the characters are so we don't gloss over anybody. Keith is from the town of Keithville, Louisiana. Says it
that
right here.
That is a great
He's 54
Keith
years old, hometown, Keithville, Louisiana.
It's population one, baby.
Yeah, I was going to say, did he create the town of Keithville?
He founded Keithville.
I mean, can I just say I'm from like Frankstown, Frankland, you know? Yeah.
Everybody who lives in Keithville is named Keith. Yeah. Well, my winner's pick was Kelly Wentworth, who is this blonde, young blonde. The only thing you heard her say was that she didn't make the merge last time and she made it this time.
We actually
she was the one like in the running outfit, the sweat gear or whatever, right?
Yeah.
I believe so, yeah. We actually got a lot of Kelly this episode, which, again, is like, even though she wasn't like a huge factor in who went home, we got a lot of stuff from her. We got several confessionals.
I'm sticking to my pick.
They showed her conversation with Spencer, which was like fairly irrelevant to anyone but Kelly.
Yeah.
They're telling
her story.
I really think she has a good shot of winning the game because we are getting her story, even though she isn't instrumental to the current events.
Yeah, we're getting just enough and we hear just enough from her even when she's not involved. And I picked her because she was so under the radar her first season, Frank. She got eliminated really early and nobody was going to see her as a threat, but she seemed sort of savvy. And in these all-star seasons, often the bigger fish will all go after each other.
Right.
And then a sort of under the radar person could float toward to the end, you know. So
and she's easy on the eyes, eh, boys?
She sure is. Yeah, I think she looks really cute in her when she wears her glasses.
Right? Yeah,
that's her look. So I'm sticking with Kelly. I mean, I also love Jeremy, and I'd be really happy if Jeremy won
Jeremy's easy on the eyes.
He sure is. He's easy on my eyes.
Yeah,
I like him when he wears his glasses.
I like him when he wears oil all over his chest.
Last
week there was an oil up challenge, so we got
the challenge wasn't to oil up. But
it was who could oil up fastest.
They had to oil
There's
up.
There's an oil up challenge. What?
That was like a slip and slide where at the end of the slip and slide you like tossed a ring onto something. But so what? To go on the slip and slide, they put oil all over their bodies.
On a special X-rated Survivor.
Yeah. It was sexy for sure.
Wow.
It was a lot of oiled up Joe and Jeremy.
Where did they put these rings?
Yeah, good question. Around some shafts.
Thank you.
Exactly.
Thanks for the payoff.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we didn't talk about Kimmy or Kelly Wigglesworth, but what else is new? Let's move on to our segments.
Yeah, let's do it. Okay. First segment. Hopefully these will work. All right. This is Hold Up, Bro. This is what moment in the show did you go, hold up, I got to rewind that and watch that again.
What happened to the soundbite in that little cue? You took it out this season?
Oh, I had the Max one in there originally, and I went back to the original Malcolm one.
I like that you used the censored version of the song so we didn't hear the N-word splattered across your podcast.
Yeah, that's one of the words we tend not to use.
Huh. I mean, you guys said I could curse.
Yeah, you can curse.
You can curse. You can say it if you want.
I have been dying to go on a podcast and get really racially offensive, so maybe this will be the one.
I still love the story. This is a complete tangent, but that you told me, Frank, about when your daughter heard the N-word in a rap song you were listening to, and you had to basically stop the song and explain to her the entire racial history of America.
Well, actually, the funny thing is, Scott, is that you have that story somewhat wrong. In that it was watching The Jerk, the Steve Martin movie.
Oh, you were watching The Jerk?
Yes, and it was the first R-rated movie I let her watch. And in my head, I was like, well, other than calling the dog shithead, which, you know, big deal. Like, there's nothing offensive. There's no nudity in that movie. There's no drugs. There's no sex scenes. And then we get to the scene where he's showing off his mansion to these, like, mafia thugs. And they're making some joke about not letting black people into the club he might open up there. And he goes, sir, I am a, and he says the N-word, and he gets into a karate move, blah, blah, blah. And my daughter, with all the innocence and cherub-like beauty, turns to me with her big blue eyes and goes, Daddy, what's a N-word? And I just sat there and was like, well, I stepped right onto this landmine, didn't I? And so I decided the only thing to do was to give her the history of the word, tell her what the word actually meant. And then after telling her about slaves in Africa and Lincoln and all this stuff, honey, let me make this clear. When you hear other kids use that word to each other, or you hear it in songs, you cannot use that word. No context can you, as a white girl from Long Beach, start throwing that word around.
So I love that you were watching The Jerk and you ended up having to talk about slavery and Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah. Well, you know what else is funny is when we had like the sex talk, that got inspired by Miley Cyrus twerking on the Video Music Awards.
Really? Oh my God.
You never know,
She's like, mommy says that she's like a stripper. I was like, oh, well, I guess, mommy. And I saw this word, this look of puzzlement. And I was like, do you know what that word means? She kind of went, no. And I was like, well, here we go.
Oh, God. Oh, man, I'm dreading all that.
Yeah, thanks, pop culture. Just keep the TV off, Scott.
Yeah, I can't do that.
Well, clearly, only Survivor.
I can't.
Yeah, just keep watching Survivor. That clearly couldn't steer him wrong at all.
I actually drove my daughter to preschool this morning, and while we were in the car on Sirius Radio, I listened to, on the Entertainment Weekly channel, Dalton Ross interviewing Cass about last night's Survivor. And I'm just like thinking, like, okay, it's just like a 10-minute interview, so then we'll go back to the Little Mermaid music. But in the meantime, this is all very random information for my 3.5-year-old daughter to be
sure. Hey, she's got to learn about the important things.
Yeah. Well, so did anyone have a hold up, bro? I was racking my brain. I could not think of anything because the episode was all talking.
I know. To rewind, a moment to rewind.
Yeah. Oh, I had to rewind that stupid poem.
You wanted to hear it again?
Like, he did not just do that. Hold on, let me just. No, he didn't.
Whole thing. Oh, no, he didn't.
I think
poem.
That has to be my moment, too. I did not rewind it, but I think that is a moment where it's appropriate to say, hold up, bro. You did not just recite.
Yeah. Maybe in a different context.
It wasn't just like a two lines of a poem.
No,
it was like an epic tale.
Yeah, and he even said they excerpted it for the show. So like it's longer and he did the whole thing. It's longer. It's not that long, but they did just part of it.
Did he say why he did it?
He didn't say. It was just a tweet where he was like, if you want to read the rest of this poem,
tweet out and say, "Hey man, they cut down my poem, and
yeah,
I think it's
the
really,
rest of it.
I think
here's
it's really important that everybody hears the whole thing."
Yeah, I'm really curious to see, because Steven has a blog that he writes every week, normally during regular seasons, but even during this one, they let him keep writing it. I'm really curious to see what his take is on that whole poem business.
It's so funny that he writes a blog for People Magazine, by the way, or their website, about the week's episode of Survivor, and he's been doing it for years now, Frank. And like evaluating people's performance on the show, and because he came off his first season as like a mastermind, and now that he's still doing it this season that he's on, but America is rapidly losing confidence in him as somebody who has any standing to talk about what's a good move or not a good move.
Yeah,
like, what do you make of that, Ryan? You're a huge Steven fan.
This is interesting because it does kind of hurt his brand to be out there failing to chop coconuts, right? But the thing that he is getting is he's getting a lot of confessionals that are strategically oriented, which does play to his brand. no one ever thought Steven was Joe and would go out there and win challenges and be a hero. So I think it's fine. I think he'll be fine.
I think he'll be fine, especially the further he goes in the game. But, you know, I read something from him before the season that I really respected him for saying. He was like, I really struggled with whether I should go back because I knew that chances are my reputation is going to take a hit, you know, because I got, even though I didn't win, I had such a glowing reputation for my first season. And then I just thought, you know what? That is the worst reason to not go.
I know.
That is,
I know.
The fear of like how I'll come off. He's like, I am not going to pass up this experience and do it again, even if I totally fall on my face, which is sort of what's been going on.
Yeah. Now, here's the thing. If you get a great edit your third time out, okay, maybe you turn down the fourth time, but you don't turn down the second time for any reason whatsoever.
There you have it.
Yeah. That's my
wow.
thought. That's
Ryan has spoken. So, Ryan, you have no hold up bro moment this week. You're
going
on record as saying,
I'm going on record.
In lieu of the history of our podcast and the 31 season history of Survivor, you are not holding true to the values of our podcast.
I know. In lieu of my hold up bro moment, I would like Frank to tell me about the N word and the history behind it.
Well, it goes back to Africa.
Not really. That's okay. Well, that'll be our other podcast, the History of the N-Word podcast.
Oh, okay. I've been doing that podcast for several years.
All right, let's move on.
All right, here's the next one. What's
the time? Is this mic still on? What's the
time? It's time to get ill regrets.
All right, this is ill regrets. This is... who do you think will have ill regrets about a decision they made this episode? And I'll start, and mine is probably going to be the same. I think we're going to have a lot of people saying...
I think we're going to agree on this one.
I'm going to say Sierra.
Of course.
Yeah. I mean, what is she doing? Excuse me. I have a lie I want to tell. Over
Let
here,
me
everyone.
Here.
Over here, everyone.
Let me distract. Let me take the focus off of Cass... and everybody hating her and put it onto me. And by the way, Frank, the person voted out is ineligible for ill regrets because that's too easy. So Cass, of course, will have a lot of regrets. But yeah, it has to be Sierra. I mean, she and last week she got like the MVP, but this week,
yeah,
it's like she just blew it all away. It was in one fell swoop. Who did that last? Like, remember last season when Mike Holloway went from the top of the totem pole to the bottom in like a 2-minute span?
Yeah, it was insane. At least that's what they made us think based on the edit. But yeah,
right.
But I think is actually even more clear.
Well, because Mike actually had the ability to win every immunity and make it to the end of the game. But Sierra does not have...
Now,
she has to rely on her social game and her strategy. She cannot rely on challenge wins, and this is a big mistake.
Yeah, I don't think she was at the top of the totem pole by any stretch of the imagination.
Not even close.
She wasn't on the totem pole, in fact. But
the totem pole is all bros.
It's
Andrew Savage and his manly men.
Yeah.
It's Andrew and Jeremy and Joe... and to an extent, Spencer.
And Steven.
To an extent, Steven, but he's not manly enough. And Tasha, as the manliest woman, according to them, because she is good at challenges, you know, she's on that totem pole with them. But
the bro down is happening.
Yes, the bro down is happening. I don't know. Frank, do you see anybody else who might regret their action?
I mean... no, because Spencer kind of went against, you know, Spencer aligned with Kaz at the beginning and then kind of distanced himself from it, but she got off the show, so obviously that worked out for him.
Right.
It didn't seem, I kind of missed, I think, the drama between Savage and Spencer. So,
That's last week, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, on the episode I saw, it really seemed like it was Tasha and Kaz who were kind of butting heads the most, and Kaz ended up off the show. I certainly don't think Tasha regrets anything.
And I love that you call her Kaz, by the way. I know we knew somebody named Kaz, but it's Kaz, but that's Kaz is better.
Oh, gotcha. I'll call her Chaos if you'd like.
No, I like Kaz. Please keep calling her Kaz.
Chaos Cast, by the way, is a self-made nickname, which no one should ever get to pick their own nickname.
It's like the king, like the king of pop.
Yeah,
she made that up her first season.
Yeah, there was an engineer I knew who everyone in the office decided his nickname would be Scooter because he moved around a lot. And he said, well, how about Turbo instead? And I said, okay, well, we're definitely not calling you Turbo.
At some point in the 90s, I was in a grunge band and we had a song called Hurricane. And I played it for Scott. And this chorus went, you know, they call me Hurricane. I played it for Scott. I'm like, what do you think? And he goes, who calls you Hurricane? He goes, I've known you your whole life. I've never heard anyone call you Hurricane ever.
That's why that song did not become a hit, because it was it was not true.
Right.
What about Steven having ill regrets for that poem? He clearly doesn't regret it. If he's tweeting it out, he clearly doesn't.
He can't read the room enough not to do the poem in the first place, and I certainly don't think he read the room enough to see how badly it bombed.
Why did he read a poem? Or recite a poem. He had it memorized.
Yeah.
It took work.
Do you think he memorized it like before the season and was like, at the right moment, I'm going to drop this bomb on everyone? Yeah.
I can't wait.
It'll be a rainy day.
Maybe he memorized like three different poems and then, you know, try to sort of see which one would be like there's a Walt Whitman could have been thrown out at any point.
Yeah.
Depending on the day, you know, if it's a rainy day and we're all sort of glum and we're stuck in the shelter, I'll whip out the manly poem and that'll really lift everybody's spirits. And they'll all look to me and be like, hey, Stephen's really cool.
Yeah.
He knows like really cool poetry.
It's like an ancient warrior chief once told me.
Yeah, that's coach right there. There's a player, one of my favorites ever, who was just like so not self-aware. He had like feathers in his hair, long hair. He wore like a kimono out to the island or something. He's like a hilarious, hilarious parody of like a Steven Seagal type. He was always doing like Tai Chi on the beach and shit.
That's you.
And he's the one who read a poem before.
Yeah.
Well, I would be disappointed if Steven Seagal didn't read a poem. But
yeah, agreed. Exactly. I mean, when you put Steven Seagal on your show, you expect him to read a poem, right?
Oh, man. Coach was TV gold.
Until
why is he not on this season?
He's been on three times already.
Oh.
So this was all people who were good enough to be brought back but hadn't already been brought back. So like there's people from Steven's season, like three other people have already come back, you know, a couple of them a couple times before they ever bothered bringing Steven back. So it's sort of like the B team of returning players in a weird way.
Right.
If that makes any sense. Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of them are good and people that like I was really happy to see come back. But that's because I'm a hardcore fan and like, you know, some of them are not at the top of the food chain.
So the people that the non-hardcore fans were happy to see back are Joe and Spencer. Those are the guys that probably got the most votes.
And they're more recent, so there hadn't been any all-star seasons. So they really are the top of their season.
I wonder, Scott.
If that makes sense.
I wonder, and I read this a couple weeks ago, and I've been thinking about it, but I wonder how much of our edit is based on the results of that voting. So they see that Spencer was the number one vote getter or number two, and they go, okay, well, we got to feature Spencer. We got to do a lot of bits about Spencer, even if he like goes out in 10th place or whatever.
Could
be misleading because they're featuring people that got a lot of votes.
Hey, man, if the edit is misleading, I'm thrilled.
I know, me too. I'm really excited.
Because there's nothing worse than knowing who's going to win weeks in advance.
Yeah.
Nothing, I tell you.
Yeah. Well, speaking of which, I want to repeat this PSA, and I probably do it until the end of the season. The boot order is officially spoiled. It's out there. Be careful what YouTube videos you look at. Don't go to the comments anywhere. You could get
comments will kill you.
You could get accidentally spoiled. There's idiots that just want to spoil everyone. So,
now, have you read it? Have you?
No, I don't. I don't know the spoilers, and I'm taking extreme measures to avoid them.
What are your extreme measures? I'm picturing you like in a barricading your house.
Straight jacket. Yeah. I literally, everything I read on the internet is vetted pre-vetted by a PA. Printed out.
A team of experts.
Yeah, well, I these all-star seasons are often spoiled, and I don't want any part of it.
All right, let's
spoilers away from us.
Let's get on to our last segment. Here we go.
We only like it if it's loud. We only like it if it's loud. Go! I can get loud too. What the? Hello to me.
Hello, you D. All right, this is getting loud. Who got loud this week? Who stood out? Who impressed?
Who stood out in a positive way?
Yeah.
As opposed to having ill regrets. Ryan?
I'm going to go with Andrew Savage. I thought he had a great week this week. He quickly got back in the numbers with his bro down alliance. And I actually really appreciated him saying, you know, fuck those people, those pieces of shit. And I'm going to play under the radar if I have to. Like, that shows that he's evolving his game at least a little bit, mm-hmm. or that he knows he needs to.
Yeah, this is the first week that I started to consider he may actually win. I still don't think he will.
I mean, I would be hugely disappointed if he's the winner, especially after last season. I just don't want to see the same guy win two seasons in a row, basically.
Right.
You know, but.
Yeah, I would be disappointed just because he's not my type of player.
Right.
I like them, as you know, the more strategic players.
Yeah, so do I. So do I.
But interesting. Interesting choice, Ryan.
Yeah, well.
You got your coveted Getting Loud award.
Yep.
Gosh, I don't have anybody yet. Let me look at these players. I have the website open.
Well, did anyone stand out Spencer? For you, Frank?
Well, I would probably say Savage as well, just because the episode kind of opens with him in that big, you know, fuck them, they're all liars moment, which was a pretty strong moment. And since I don't know some of the history, I kind of, just because he seemed sort of, like you said, they're cutting him to be this heroic figure. And the show opens with him kind of frustrated that, you know, everyone's been turning his back on him. So it was really easy to kind of warm up to him pretty quickly. But I would say by the end, I was kind of rooting for Tasha only because I was rooting against Kaz.
Right.
Kaz, as I say.
Please, yes. I'm going to start calling her Kaz from now on.
Yeah, no, she's Kaz. But I didn't like the way that she was sort of playing Tasha and kind of throwing her under the bus in front of people. And I don't know. I sort of, as that battle got ugly towards the end, I found myself aligning more with Tasha. And so I was happy to see Kaz leave and Tasha stay. So I guess in that sense, you know, I like that Tasha kind of stood up to Kaz and helped people rally against her. That's what I would have done.
Yes, for sure.
The Tasmanian devil.
The Tasmanian devil.
There you go.
That's a nickname.
Where's Rob Sesternino with his bell for that one?
Right.
Guys,
I have a whole bunch of percussion. I could have been doing bells and whistles and percussion this whole time.
You should have been. It's not too late. It's not too late.
The bell is a signature element of another podcaster, so another Survivor podcaster. So we'll stay away from a bell, but any percussion.
The premium number one Survivor podcaster has a bell. Well, he's got a bell. We don't have a bell.
We'll go with a cowbell.
Perfect. Okay, so I want you to use your cowbell to punctuate my choice for Getting Loud. And I like Tasha. I like Savage last night. I'm going to strangely go with somebody who isn't my type of player very much, but I'm going to go with Joe. Thank you. Because Joe also is somebody who he actually is, I think, even though the show has told us this and Joe has told us this, so they want us to think this. But I do see him, I don't know whether it's luck or gameplay, he's set himself up in a way better position than he was at this point in Worlds Apart. He, at that point, was, you know, somebody that everybody wanted to get rid of because he was going to win everything. Now, everybody loves him. You even bring up the idea that you might want to vote off Joe and people don't like you.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And he was a swing vote last night, he and Spencer, and he basically made, I think, the right decision. yeah. for himself.
Well, even if he had even if him and Spencer had chosen to go with Cass, they would have lost.
Right.
Because, well, Kelly might have stayed with Cass. It's hard to say.
So, I mean, it's narrow. I mean, Andrew had a great episode. Tasha had another great episode. So those are great choices too. You know, Kelly Wentworth to me is the standout for the whole season just because of, I think she's playing a really smart, subtle game. But as such, you don't usually see her stand out except right. for in the season premiere, she stood out a lot. Because she found the idol and everything. But so I'll give it. I'll throw Joe a bone. I mean, I know he's at home clamoring for me to give him my seal of approval. And for the first time in two seasons, I'll give Joe my bone.
All right.
Wow.
Joe, you got my bone. Cowbell, please.
Oh, Joe, sorry. Hold on.
Thank you.
I didn't realize I was supposed to do it on every time you referenced the word bone.
Next time.
I think we might have to add Frank as our band leader.
Yeah, there you go.
Got it, guys.
The Snakes, Rats, and Goats band.
The band is just a cowbell. Oh, man. We really did it.
Yep.
We said it all.
I told you I was going to bring something unique to your podcast.
And you delivered. We appreciate it. Well, so yes, as Scott said, we said it all.
We've said it all.
And Frank, thank you for joining us. You're only allowed to speak in cowbell now.
I've been speaking in cowbell solely for the last few years. This has actually been my first speaking appearance in quite some time. Well, so I'd like to thank you.
We're so blessed.
So Frank, you now have seen this episode. You now know the show a little bit of the show that I have been obsessed with for 15 years, and you've made fun of me for. Would you ever watch it? Do you have any curiosity to say, I wonder what happens next?
Absolutely not. But anyways, no. Actually, despite how much you like it, Scott, I would actually watch it again. I thought it was pretty entertaining. I'm not going to go so far as to say I've been making a giant mistake for 15 years, if that's what you're trying to egg me into. But.
Well, I think you've made a lot of mistakes over the last 15 years. This is a minor one.
I just feel like you're walking me into like, so Frank, you know, has it been just a waste these last 15 years?
No, I'm the one who's wasted an inordinate amount of time watching this show for 15 years.
Well, I've been telling you that for years.
But
I have to say, I thought it was a pretty fun show. I really enjoyed it.
Well, that's good.
Cool, because it wasn't one of the more fun, quote unquote, episodes. So
yeah, this was like a pretty mild episode.
Well, I enjoy watching people plot and deceive each other.
Then this is the show for you.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah,
that's my favorite part of the show.
Agree.
Last week's was pretty exciting with Terry leaving because his son needed a heart transplant and all that stuff. Yeah, but yeah.
Wouldn't it be funny if he gets back and turns out that that was all like a plot of Spencer somehow? <you know? laughs>
Spencer got hold of a phone and like.
Yeah. It's like my name is Bad when Walt's about to get popped, and then he calls Hank and that says his wife's in the hospital, like that kind of.
Yeah, totally. Spencer like steals one of the cameraman's cell phones,
orchestrates this whole thing. Yeah,
calls Jeff Probst.
I'm a doctor. Yeah. And
I'm here with Mrs. Dietz. I don't know her first name.
Who's the guy who could win? Terry. His son is in the hospital. He needs to leave immediately.
Dude, that's what I would do. I'm telling you.
I'm glad we had you on this week, because last week that joke would have been a little too fresh.
Would have been too soon,
but this week is perfect amount of time.
This week it's totally cool to make fun of this child and his health situation.
The kid is fine now, so that's good to hear.
This was 6 months ago. This was shot like 6 months ago. There was a player, Frank, back in season 7, so that's a long time ago, who orchestrated something semi like that. It's notorious. Where there's a certain point in the show where usually in the season where they bring in like family members to visit, uh-huh. like if you've made it this far, and then it's an emotional thing. If you win a challenge, you can see your family member for like a couple hours. So this guy had his best friend come as his family member, you know, and they orchestrated a lie before the season that, you know, if I make it far enough where you get to come on the show, tell me in front of everyone that my grandmother died.
Whoa.
And then I'll get all the sympathy.
And then the best part was his buddy, whose name was like, what, Double D? Something dumb.
Something stupid. Yeah. So
Johnny Fairplay is the guy who orchestrated this. In the,
oh, that's like, Johnny Fairplay?
Yeah. So he goes,
yeah, her, he goes, him I've heard of.
He goes,
him
you've heard of. How's grandma, bro? Or something like that. And at that point, you could see like Double D, like he remembers that he's supposed to do this.
I don't think it was Double D, but I'm going to go with Double D.
Yeah, I hope it was someone named Double D.
Yeah.
It was something like that. I wish
basically, it's Double D. Yeah.
Yeah. It's funnier that I got it wrong, I suppose. But
yeah.
In any case, he goes, "She's dead, dude." Which is one of the, I think, best Survivor quotes of all time. And it wasn't even from a contestant.
She's dead, dude.
She's dead, dude. Or no, she died.
Oh, she died, dude. That's it. Yeah,
oh, I got his name, by the way. I just Googled it. It's actually better. Thunder D.
Oh, Thunder
wow.
D.
That's right.
Thunder D.
It wasn't a reference to his boobs. It was a reference to his cock.
He's got to be he's a bass player in some band somewhere.
Probably.
And that's where this Johnny Fairplay, and that's obviously his real name is John Dalton. That's where he first became famous, was on Survivor Pearl Islands as a notorious villain. And this was his, you know, most dastardly move.
Didn't he like jump on someone's back and get his teeth smashed out? Or
Danny
something?
Bonaducci.
Yeah, that's.
That wasn't on Survivor. That was on a reality TV award show.
Ironically, it did change the results of a Survivor season.
Impacted Survivor, because then he got to come back for an All-Star season, and it was right after that, and he had like his teeth like were all out, and he was in total pain, and he ended up like wanting to quit the game and asking to be voted out first. And the person
who they were targeting instead of him went on to win, right?
Were they targeting Parvati?
I thought so, yeah.
Well, so there you go. And a legend was born. But wow. So yeah, that's the Johnny Fairplay with the grandmother lie, and it got him some sympathy from, and it didn't actually even end up getting him much, but it got him some sympathy and some allies for a little while. And he just kept referring to it through the whole season. He'd be like, "Of course I'm with you. I swear on my grandma's grave."
So good. My grandma's watching Jerry Springer right now was the...
That was his quote.
Yeah.
Yeah. He didn't tell production either. So the production thought it was real. And then they called...
That's how you home. Do it.
They called like his family's home to be like, do you want us to take John out of the game? And they're like, what?
Thunder D!
Thunder D.
Came through, man.
Thunder D's got to come back.
Double D, Thunder D. There was a D involved.
So Frank, so you know, we can continue to send you links to watch episodes if you want to see the rest of the season play out. The Second Chance in Cambodia. But Frank, where can we find you on social media and the internet if we want more of this brilliance?
Oh, sure, Scott. I'd love to provide you with that information.
Thank you. Sure. I don't know how to get in touch with you. So.
No, that was just such a smooth segue. I was like in a zone. I got entranced for a second.
Entertainment industry professional, right?
Yeah, no, I'm not used to such professional segue. That was really incredible. Ryan, you should take note.
Writers Guild Award nominee right here.
Yeah. Right, yeah, nominee.
not winner.
You can Twitter. On you can
I'm the
find
Steven
me,
of the WGA Awards. Go ahead.
Right, sure. sorry, you can find me at kropcrop.com/Frank Meyer Productions. That's where you can see all of my reels and the director and producer and writing work that I've done. Right now I'm directing a movie, a documentary movie called Risen, the story of Shran Hellraiser Smith. Hellraiser was in Sons of Man, a Wu-Tang offshoot group, and I'm making about a documentary film about his recovery from a brain aneurysm he had a few years ago. So you can go check us out on Facebook at Risen Documentary. And then I'm on Facebook. It's Frank M. Meyer, or Instagram, The Frank Meyer. And Meyer, as always, is famously spelled M-E-Y-E-R.
Are you a lot of Survivor fans love Twitter. Are you on Twitter?
I am on the Twitter. You can find me at Frank M. Meyer as well. Also, SW Cheetahs, my band, the Streetwalkin' Cheetahs, is on Twitter, and we're on Instagram as Streetwalkin' Cheetahs.
Is the Cheetahs tour over right now? I know you were just on a little tour.
Yeah, we just did a whole bunch of West Coast dates and did Vegas and a whole bunch of fun stuff. Went up to San Francisco, played here in L.A., and now we're just booking some more shows probably for the end of the year. But we you know, basically just do little tours and festivals from time to time. We put out a single last year called Escape from New York City, inspired by my favorite movie, Escape from New York, the John Carpenter.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Made in Manhattan.
Yeah, inspired by my favorite movie, Made in Manhattan.
With Jennifer Lopez.
Yeah. So yeah, we've been doing activity from time to time. When, you know, when the kids need to be rocked, Scott, you know that I'm there for the kids.
Oh, I know. You're like an ambassador to the nation's young people.
Yep, I'm a Pied Piper of rock.
And if you want to see a puppet show that Frank and I made, you could go on Vimeo and search for Video Game Theater. It was on MTV Italy in the late aughts. You could just come down to one of our houses. We'll do a little puppet show.
Yeah.
Were you at any point?
We did terrible, terrible things to puppets on that show. You should tune in. It's pretty fun.
That's true. Yeah, there's some puppet sex, et cetera. It's called Video Game Theater.
Scott, you and I actually, if you go by our puppet personas, you and I made love on that show.
I've been trying to block that out. We did, didn't we?
We sure did, Scott. Rick, we sure did.
The Joust episode.
Yep.
Rick Joust and his ostrich.
Yeah!
All right, Scott, where can people find you on Twitter?
Oh, they can't. I am in hiding on Twitter. Scott Chernoff, Ryan. You know that.
And they can find me at Ryan Elder Music. And this has been Snakes, Rats, and Goats. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Thanks, Frank. Thank you, Frank. Go to iTunes and give us stars and shit like that.
Will do. Thanks, Ryan. Thanks, Scott. Thanks, Scott. Thanks, Ryan.
Thanks, Frank.
You're welcome, Frank.
All right.
Okay. Bye, America.
Bye.
The tribe has spoken. Now I'm going to put out your little lamp with my lamp stopper.